There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines and top debate. This is The Grill on DubaiEye 103.8.
Goal of the early kickoff, the Premier League, Chris McCarthy.
Indeed there is. Not good news if you are like Tom Ucker and you're a West Ham United fan, because it's West Ham 0, Tottenham 1. And what a good goal this is from a Tottenham perspective. What a horrible goal this is if you're a Hammers fan. Andy Carroll, who is on for the injured Mikel Antonio, it is he that gives the ball away. It's a horrible ball in midfield. He tries to play it into Kouyaté. He overhits it. It falls to the feet of Christian Eriksen, the little Dane. He finds the little through ball to Dele Alli wide on the right-hand side. His cross, first time cross, bullet header from Harry Kane in off the back post. It is West Ham 0, Tottenham 1. Nothing short of what Spurs deserve in this one. They have been the better team. They've looked the more solid. And it's now an uphill task for West Ham. They've now got the fans on their back. Slaven Bilic as well, looking a little bit of a forlorn figure. And now Spurs, well, they're producing a little bit of, well, beautiful football now, and they're cutting through once again. And just as I say that, it's 2-0. Wow, what a goal that is. Harry Kane yet again, and it's like cutting knife through butter, this one. It really is. And, well, Joe Hart, no chance. He makes the initial save from Dele Alli. The ball falls to Harry Kane, and he's got the easiest of tasks, just stroking it in to the empty net. Spurs are now ramping. We're watching a repeat of this one, and again, it's West Ham giving the ball away. A long ball upfield from Joe Hart, and it's Andy Carroll bullied. Andy Carroll bullied again. He's 6'5", he should never lose that ball. He does, though. Spurs, blink of an eye, turn it from defence to attack into the feet of Harry Kane. It's Christian Eriksen again. Wonderful touch from him. Jan Vertonghen plays it into the path of Dele Alli. His shot is saved. Falls to Harry Kane. Easiest task for him. West Ham 0, Spurs 2. Game over.
Problems there, and problems for Bilic, amongst others. Also a goal up in Scotland.
It is indeed, yeah. I'm having to turn to my right-hand side now, and it's that Aussie. Tom Rogic is the man who has opened the scoring. It's Rangers 0, Celtic 1. Tom Rogic, a lovely footballer. I don't think he gets enough credit, does Tom Rogic. He's been brought back into the team by Brendan Rodgers this afternoon, and it's he that has opened the scoring 5 minutes into the second half there. The Rangers fans have been silenced. Ibrox is silenced, or of course the Celtic fans away at the left-hand side as I look. They are buoyant. They are buzzing. They are the ones singing. It's Rangers 0, Celtic 1. And to that texter who's disagreeing with me on whether Celtic Rangers is the biggest derby in world football, Al Ahly Zamalek has been put forward over in Cairo, Egypt. Yes, big fixture, but I still think it is Celtic against Rangers. We've got a goal for you as well. The goals are now flying in, Tom. We've got a goal for you in Spain. It's Atletico Madrid against Sevilla, and I can tell you Atletico Madrid have taken the lead in this one. 5 minutes into the second half there. It only took 60 seconds. Yannick Ferreira Carrasco, the Belgian, to open the scoring. Atletico Madrid 1, Sevilla 0.
Plenty going on in the world of football. Plenty going on in the world of cricket at the moment. Just not today, unless, of course, you are keen to find out which county is going to stay up and which ones are going to go down in the county championship. Tomorrow, on the other hand, lots to look forward to. We have got England against the West Indies. We've also got India against Australia. This is turning out to be a nice one-day series between two of the powerhouses of international cricket. Very, very hot conditions on Thursday for the last one-day international between these two. This is what happened in it.
Has he taken it? Yes, he has.
Oh, good shot. The best shot from Ajinkya Rahane this afternoon. Oh, lovely shot. Oh, nice. Will be shot for man. There's only one way. It's headed for four.
There it is. His 45th 50 in one day in nationals. Slow ball again, worked away. That'll be his half century, and he settles for one. His 20th 50.
Again, two is the call. Oh, had to make the dive. But as he got in.
Thank you, I've made my decision.
Yeah! Ball, just gone through. And Manish Pandey has got out early once more. He's not having a good one-day series. Such an important innings for him, this one.
Oh, it's taken. Maxwell hardly ever puts anything down. Oh, he's played on not to be today. Now has the catch been taken? I think it has. Oh, taken. What a catch this, especially for a man who's really struggling today. Another slow delivery, another light blue from Kane Richardson, but they're going to get four runs. Well done, Bumrah. Let's see what he does here. Misses by a mile. Wants the run. Gets run out as well. Is that a wide? Nope. So, a dot ball to finish the over. Just six runs from the last over. With all that, what a start for India. Oh, well, it's gone. Straight to that slip fielder there. Bhuvneshwar Kumar strikes again.
Oh, it's in the gap. At the Eden Gardens, you only need to hit the ball in the gap for four.
This and time on the offside.
Yes, through the offside.
Oh, what a shot. That's what you get with somebody who thinks different. That's gone. Beautiful piece of work from Nimistani.
Well, another great 50 for the captain, Stephen Smith. His 18th in one-day international cricket for Australia.
There's a fielder there. He's taken it eventually. What the young man wanted, exactly what Australia didn't. Oh, that's put on the pads. The fingers going up. Here's the other. Oh, is it over? Has he taken the catch? Up goes the finger. Gee, this game has turned around. Kuldeep Yadav's got a hat trick here at the Eden Gardens. Oh, what a game this is. Third Indian to get a hat trick. Now, close that up. Surely they're going to ask for a review there. Umpire's finger went up pretty quickly.
Dev, review for LBW.
Okay, Richard, three reds. I'll tell you when you're on screen to stay with your decision.
So that's what's been going on in the India-Australia series. A cracking game that came to a conclusion. That's a nice little series. Hot conditions though, Mark Archer.
Yeah, it's been tough, isn't it, for both teams. But Australia have just failed to come up. When the pressure's really gone on the Aussies, none of their players have stepped up. And they, Steve Smith got a start yesterday. A couple of the other middle-order batsmen got into the 40s and 50s but couldn't go on. And really it was a comfortable win by India, who've now won both the first two matches. It's a five-match series, followed by three T20 International. So it's a must-win rubber tomorrow for Australia. The match is going to be at indoor, and all the pressure, really, you would think, are on the Aussies at the moment. Steve Smith, the captain, says, well, they're not making good decisions under pressure.
I think it's just not watching the ball closely enough and backing your skills. The guys have trained and trained really well, and it's now about getting out in the middle and just executing your skills when you're under pressure and not panicking as such. I think we panicked last game a little bit, and this game it's just... we just can't get the partnerships, and we're just making silly errors when we're under pressure, and you can't afford to do that against a quality lineup like India. Yeah, as I said, I think it was upon one of us to go on and make a big score and be there at the end. You know, that's the way we want to play. One of our top four needs to go on and make a big score, and Hedy and I were the two that got in, and we weren't able to do so. So a lot of the blame falls on us. We got a good little partnership together there. I think we put on 70-odd maybe. But, you know, if you turn that 70 into 140, then the game's closed. We just weren't able to do it. We thought that it was just play on. Didn't realise it's a dead ball if, you know, we didn't choose to run. I think Boovy was running, he knew what was going on, but Hardik turned around and went the other way. So we just thought the ball was still in play, but they've said the rules that if they think it's out and they go off, it's a dead ball, so that's fine, no problem. It's happening a bit too often for my liking, to be honest with you, in all forms of cricket. You know, we've had a lot of collapses and we need to stop. It's easy to just sit here and say it needs to stop, but, you know, when you get out in the middle, you need to change what you're doing because it's not working. So, you know, watching the ball closer, or maybe the guys are trying to watch it too closely and forgetting about just playing the game. It's a hard one to put my finger on, but whatever it is, it needs to change, and we need to make better decisions when we're under pressure and start playing the game properly, as we're having too many collapses and it's not good enough. Well, you have to. That's part of playing the game. You know, we're both playing on the same surface. It's about adapting to whatever conditions you're dealt with and summing things up and communicating effectively amongst the team. And I think we're doing that okay. We're just not executing our skills when we're out there in the middle, and we need to start doing that because against a quality team like India, if we're not scoring the runs we need to, then we're not going to win many games of cricket.
Difficult place to go and win a cricket game over India, especially with conditions, as I said, as they've been over the last couple of weeks. But India, they've just got so much strength and depth at the moment. If the go-to men are not scoring the runs or taking the wickets, there's somebody standing up to the point.
Yeah, there's a couple of players I haven't heard of before here. Kuldeep Yadav took bowled his full complement of 10 overs, took 3 for 54. And one man who doesn't get much credit usually for the Indian side was the opening bowler, Pavishnu Kumar. He had an amazing figure, 6.1 overs, 3 for 9. 3 for 9 from the opening bowler against the Aussies. This is, listen to Kumar speaking after the match.
Yes, I planned, you know, the first ball I bowled, I knew that there's some swing on the wicket. So, you know, then, especially for Warner, you know, generally I bowl outswingers to him in test also. I bowl mostly outswingers to him. So I knew there's a, you know, good chance that I can get him out, outswingers for him. So that's how I planned. And for Cartwright, I guess. So there was a normal plan for him bowling, you know, top off stump and outswingers for him. Yes, you know, workload is something that everyone is very curious nowadays. We are taking care of ourselves, you know, more than what we used to 2 years back, you know, and thanks to our physio and trainer, they're managing us really well. So, you know, fitness, diet and all these things come into a culture, you know, big time. You know, in modern day cricket, 250 is, you know, it's not a, you know, big total to defend, but we knew if we have to win, we have to keep taking wickets. So that's what we were talking about. But, you know, there was no bad mood or no one was upset when we got out on 250. But yes, all captain or management or each other, what we wanted is to believe each other and, you know, believe our abilities, and that what we exactly did. You know, we always talk about, you know, keep taking wickets even middle overs. So, you know, yes, there's opportunity with the new ball and death in the death, but it's when you take wickets in the middle overs, that's how you win the match and exactly what happened.
Australia need to get back into this series. They'll get another opportunity tomorrow, next ODI.
Yeah, third ODI of five is taking place tomorrow in Indore. As of England also hosting the West Indies, it's the third ODI. There was a washout in the second match of this series, but the third ODI tomorrow is down in your old West Country, Tom, in Bristol.
Good game down there in Bristol. Good to have some international cricket. I just hope that they get some cricket, because obviously we had the game on Thursday.
It's pretty wet down there, end of September.
I mean, it's
third
freezing.
ODI.
Did you see the crowd up at the Durham game? They were absolutely freezing.
Big brass monkeys up there, wasn't it?
Durham, the middle of September. The one on Thursday was complete washout, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a washout. So, England lead the series 1-0, but there's a couple of matches to get concluded. You just hope they get some cricket in, of course. Much of the cricket eyes in the UK and in England particularly will be focused on the Ashes team announcement midweek. That'll be an interesting development there. The England selectors will be pondering some tough decisions, particularly around some of the batting spots. But during the week, Andrew Strauss, the director of cricket, had this to say about the Ashes selection.
Well, I think there are a couple of points to make. I think, first of all, we have tried and tested quite a few players over the last couple of years. So, you know, there are a lot of people that have built some experience in that England team and that England environment. And so, you know, I don't think there are a huge number of people out there in county cricket that haven't been tried and tested that are making an incredibly strong case to be on that tour at the moment. I also agree. I don't think it's the sort of place you want someone making their debut. I think ideally you have a completely settled team going to Australia. I don't think we've quite got that. But I think the guys that have been involved this summer would have learnt a huge amount. You think about David Milan and Tom Westley and Mark Stoneman. for them to have had that experience and get a flavour for Test cricket at its hardest, I think, you know, in terms of that balance between bat and ball, it doesn't get much harder than that.
The batting's certainly still the main issue, isn't it? Why haven't we been able to nail down long-term solutions for a while now to positions 2, 3 and 5?
Yeah, and that's a question that we've been asking ourselves quite constantly over the last couple of years. You know, I think that there's been a bit of a common theme that's emerged around players coming in, showing they're capable of doing it, getting a score or a couple of scores early on, and then gradually being worn down by, you know, a number of poor performances or a bowler getting on top of them or the whole environment and the expectation and the pressure. And, you know, I think the message to those players is Test cricket is not about how good you are, it's about how consistent you are.
Are you satisfied then that County Championship cricket is still producing players that are ready, or batsmen that are ready for Test cricket?
Well, I'm satisfied that County Championship cricket is very competitive, and that I think it's a really strong domestic tournament. And if you looked at the domestic tournaments elsewhere, I think ours is as good as anywhere. What I'm not 100% satisfied with is that guys are going into that England environment 100% prepared for everything that comes alongside Test cricket, and that's not the on-field stuff. It's the, you know, the media interest. It's the playing in front of big crowds. It's the attention and pressure that comes alongside it.
So what we've got for you, we have got another ODI between the two tomorrow, as Archer was saying. That's down in south. That's down in the southwest, down in Bristol. We've got goal over in Scotland.
We do indeed. Sorry to interrupt, Tom. It's the first Old Firm of the season. Rangers against Celtic. They met 6 times last season, did Celtic and Rangers. Celtic winning 5 of those. 1 draw in there. I can tell you Celtic have this one wrapped up now. It's Rangers 0, Celtic 2. And it's Lee Griffith, the Scottish striker, on the score sheet. He's celebrating in front of the Rangers fans. We're just watching highlights of this now. It's a move down the right-hand side. That's the beauty of Celtic. They can go through the gears at will. And it's a beautiful goal, this. It really is. Patrick Roberts on loan from Manchester City. It's he that cuts in, plays a little reverse ball through to Lee Griffiths, and on that right foot of his, he slots the ball through the legs of Fotheringham, the Rangers goalkeeper. Rangers 0, Celtic 2. Real good goal, that. Celtic all smiles. Rangers, there'll be tears, and I'm hoping there will not be much trouble in Glasgow this evening. Rangers 0, Celtic 2.
ODI, West Indies against England, Bristol tomorrow. That one gets underway about 3 o'clock local time. Bangladesh also just arriving down in South Africa for their series down there. And the Ashes announcement is Wednesday, is that right?
I think it's around Wednesday, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see who the England cricket selectors name to go down under. Obviously, difficult task. First test match is at the Gabba in Brisbane in November, so it's all going to come around pretty quick, and looking forward to the Ashes, Tom. It should make the winter months very interesting indeed if you're a cricket fan.
Let's just get back to the Australia-India series, because lots of text messages coming in about this one. Him, thanks so much indeed for your text message. Himadri sending through saying the Aussies are obsessed with trying to unsettle Virat Kohli, and it's backfiring big time. Kuldeep haunted them during the fourth test earlier this year as well. He's been a thorn in their side ever since. Agree with that summarisation?
Yeah, it's been interesting because we've seen, because of the events like the IPL, where players now from different countries do come together. A lot of the Aussie players are playing in the IPL, the teammates of Virat Kohli, but there seems to be a bit of a falling out. There seems to be still a bit of niggle at international level, which is good. You don't want international sport played when you're a bit too matey-matey and all too friendly. So it's good to see that there's some friendly rivalry still between the Aussies and the Indians. And I don't know whether giving any sort of abuse, or whether it be verbal or intimidationary sort of chat from the Aussies to Virat Kohli, I think he takes it in his stride. I think he gets stronger by that. I think he's one of those players, a bit like Steve Waugh, that concentrates more when he's under a bit of pressure, when the team's right in his face. It tends to bring out the best in Virat Kohli, so I'm not sure if that's the best approach. But let's wait and see. Of course, that's the one-day international cricket taking place. 5 ODIs in India with the Aussies there. A couple of ODIs left of the series in the UK with West Indies there. But then the focus turns to the Ashes. We just heard Andrew Strauss talking about the England selection. What are they going to do? There's some definite gaps there, particularly at the top of the order. They're short of a number 3 and they're short of an opener, which is vital in Australia to do well. You have to see off the Kookaburra ball in the first 20 overs. Otherwise, you can do all sorts of damage. We know batting gets easier. One man that will play a part for the Aussies is their off-spinner, Nathan Lyon. He's back in Australia. He's not taking part in the ODI series. He is preparing for the Test series, though. And this is what he had to speak to earlier today about the Aussies' preparation for the Ashes.
I know what you guys will write in the papers, and there will be Fox Sports headlines saying there's four quicks for the Gabbers. I've played seven Test matches there already, and I think every Test match has said four quicks. But I'm comfortable with where I'm sitting at the moment. I'm really confident, especially coming off the back of Bangladesh personally. So I'm very happy with where I'm sitting leading into the Ashes. As soon as you start getting too comfortable, it gets taken away from you. At the moment, I'm probably getting hunted down by all the other spinners, so I need to go out there and keep improving. I'm doing that here in Sydney. I'll do that in the domestic one-day competition for New South Wales, keep going out and try and perform well for those guys. And then we've got three Shield games before the first Ashes test, so there's no spot certain, that's for sure. But yeah, I'm very confident where I'm sitting right now that we're going to have a massive Ashes campaign, that's for sure. I've been working hard in the nets, bowling to the likes of Steve Smith, who's the number one batter in the world. So I've got the best preparation bowling to these guys in the nets. So if I can keep training hard in there and keep improving, then who knows where the limit is.
A couple of other lines to bring you on this one. England bowler Toby Rowland-Jones will miss Middlesex's final game of the season with injuries. Also a major doubt for the Ashes. So that's a blow to the selectors. Talking of the County Championship coming to an end, and Surrey have secured their Division 1 status with a 6-wicket win over Somerset, leaving the visitors in serious relegation trouble. It is coming to a conclusion, the County Champs, at the moment.
Yeah, congratulations to Essex during the week. They won their first title since, I think, 92. Back in the old Graham Gooch, Nasser Hussain era. So good to see Essex. And I think they were promoted from Division 2 last year. So it shows you what you can do, improvement in Division 1. So Essex have wrapped up the Division 1 County Championship title. I think there's still a fight on between two or three counties to actually stay in Division 1. That's probably where the interest is. It's the final round of County Championship cricket this week. So it'll be interesting to see who stays up and who goes down and who gets promoted from Division 2.
We're going to keep an eye on that one for you. One man who thinks that changes are afoot and need to be made is Sir Ian Botham, one of the finest players ever for England on cricket fields around the world. He believes that the professionalism game is leaving some players behind at the moment, and the clubs themselves will need compensation when players are contracted out to England. These are some of his thoughts.
There are agents out there looking after these players. Paul Coughlin has an agent, and I have no problems with Paul wanting to further his career. I think that's the way it should be. It's no different than a football team producing someone from the Championship or Division 1 that goes to a Premiership side. But he doesn't just go and say cheerio and that's the end of the deal. You get some compensation, and that's how you keep producing players. And the problem we've got at Durham is we've invested a lot of time and a lot of money in Paul. He's a fantastic, promising cricketer, one of the best in the country. I can understand sides wanting him. We're not going to stand in his way. We're in the second division. We'll build a side to get out of that division, but we get absolutely no compensation for all the work that we've done, the time and the investment that's been put into Paul. I think that's wrong. How are we meant to replace him with players when we're not getting anything for the player that's just left us, who is an excellent player?
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Let's give you some live scores then from the early kickoffs in Spain, Scotland and England. Chris McCarty's across them all.
We will start with the early kickoff in the Premier League. It is West Ham against Tottenham. The second half is just a minute old. It remains West Ham 0, Tottenham 2. Two goals for Harry Kane, and we're seeing the stats at half-time as well. Only Lionel Messi has scored more goals in 2017 than Harry Kane. Messi's got 34 in 26. Harry Kane, what a record this is. He scored 25 in 23 games. So no finer striker right now in the Premier League than Harry Kane, judging on the stats, that is, in 2017. In Scotland, it remains Rangers 0, Celtic 2, so we'll look as if we are headed for two away wins in the two early kickoffs over there in the UK. Tom Rogic, the Aussie midfielder, opening the scoring shortly after the half-time, after the break, and then it was Lee Griffiths just moments ago slotting home after a wonderful through ball from Patrick Roberts. So Celtic look as if they're going to extend their unbeaten domestic record to 57 matches. Yes, 6-5-7, an unbelievable record since Brendan Rodgers took charge. And in Spain as well, we are looking as if we are headed for a home victory, because Atletico Madrid, they lead Sevilla by 2-0. Yannick Ferreira Carrasco, the Belgian, opening the scoring again shortly after the break. And in just moments ago, Antoine Griezmann, the Frenchman, doubling Atletico's advantage. It does mean they will close the gap to Barcelona at the top of La Liga to just 1 point. Games played 6, 1-4, 2 draws for Atletico, so it does mean that they remain unbeaten. Into the final 15 minutes on that one, Atletico Madrid 2, Sevilla 0.
I just want to stay with the football if I can for a while. Big thank you to all of you for text messages. Big thanks to Bubba texting in off the back of our chat with Nick McCurwey of Yas Marina Circuit. Bubba asking about that interview. It'll be available on Podpost, Bubba, and anyone else that wants to find out what's going on down at Yas Marina Circuit, not just Grand Prix weekend, but throughout the year. Then you can find the podcast on our website. But then a lot of people getting involved with regards to derbies, because we are seeing a couple of derbies at the moment. London Derby, West Ham against Tottenham. Also the big derby, the Old Firm Derby, Rangers against Celtic. A couple of people getting involved. One saying, just to clarify, Rangers-Celtic is nowhere near the biggest same-city derby in the world. Ali against Zamalek in Cairo have 12 million supporters each in Cairo alone. So, yeah, I mean,
must be a big stadium.
Yeah, 12 million supporters of each club in Cairo. That's not to say there isn't. You know, Glasgow's what, a considerably smaller city than Cairo. 1 million plus, around about the 1 million mark in Glasgow. However, it's not about that. It's about the football match on a wider worldwide scale. And I've no doubt, having lived in Scotland, and some people may say I'm biased, but having seen the Old Firm up close and personal, and given all that is attached to that fixture, it is massive, it really is. And don't let the fact that Scottish football is falling on hard times, it's a bit in the doldrums now, detract from the fact that it is a huge, huge fixture. You've got to be in that city to understand. And listen, with all due respect to the texter that texted in, he or she would be right to say, I've never been in Cairo for a Zamalek Al Ahly match. So again, it's only I'm only going with what I've seen and know on this subject, is that it is the biggest culturally, politically. There is so much more that throws into the melting pot in a Celtic Rangers match that it means an awful lot. Now, I've been to a Milan derby, I've been very fortunate, and I've got to say, that was, from a noise perspective, my goodness, that put El Clasico into the shade, and it's got a lot of history and intrigue. You could go to Turkey for Galatasaray, Fenerbahce, you could go to Argentina, Boca against River Plate, of course. There are so many wonderful derbies around the world, but just for everything that it's involved and evokes, I still think Old Firm is right up there.
Rayan's with you as well, saying Milan derby is the biggest derby in world football without a doubt. Thanks so much indeed for that one, Rayan. If anyone else has got their thoughts on it, then feel free to give them to us. You can text them through to us now, 4001. Biggest derby in the world is which one and where? Let's hear now from Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers has been talking about derbies, and he is of no doubt that this one's the biggest.
How does that game compare to the Merseyside derby and the South Wales derby?
Well, like I say, they're different. I have to say the Celtic Rangers games are, there's more intensity in them, and I think it's, there's the historical context around the games as well. There's different elements to the Celtic Rangers games that aren't sat in the other two derby games.
Yeah.
Swansea Cardiff was that, again, they're all special in their own right. But I think everyone recognises worldwide the intensity and the real pressure around the Celtic Rangers games, and guys that have been involved in them and been involved in them for numbers of years will tell you there's a different emotion around it.
Yeah.
So and like all derbies, you want to do them for your supporters.
Yeah.
So that's always our objective, to play well, to win, and make them proud.
Would you say that's the biggest derby in football worldwide? Celtic Rangers.
Listen, it's hard to say that. I think there's so many. If you look at the Milan derbies and you look at the other games worldwide, you know, you some of those South American derbies.
Yeah.
You know, they're absolutely phenomenal, and each derby is something special for, you know, their own people. You know, Liverpool Everton. You look at that. The Merseyside derby, where some of them, maybe not so much now, but certainly in years gone by, where they've been together.
Yeah.
But that's a real. Those are real intense games, but this game, like I say, there's been a political side to Celtic Rangers, been a historical side, and and most people that actually come to have played at Celtic, you know, Paolo Maldini mentioned that as a professional football player, you have to have played once at Celtic Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. And guys like him and Iniesta and you know, Lionel Messi talking about the best atmosphere they've ever played in. You know, you listen to Rio Ferdinand talk and these guys. There's just a noise that comes out of Celtic Park in these types of games where, you know, you don't hear it elsewhere. So so it's a privilege to be involved in it.
Yeah.
The big games, big pressure games, but if you get the end result in them, it's all worth it.
Brendan Rodgers, the man in charge up at Celtic at the moment, doing a good job in your mind?
Oh, of course he is, Tom. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't lost a domestic game, for goodness sake. He's done wonderful. He's done it all that was asked of him. And, you know, getting Celtic into the group stages last season of the Champions League was a huge step forward. To back that up this year by getting them once again into the group stages. A little bit of naivety, I think, on the part. I'm a huge fan of Brendan Rodgers, but in those big games, he's got a certain brand, he's got a certain philosophy, and to use his word, and he wants to stick to that. But I do think in Europe, he's got to be a little cuter tactically. Far too open the other week against PSG, and they were given an absolute battering. I think it was their heaviest home defeat since 1895, for goodness sake. So that gives you an idea, but no doubt in my mind that he has done a wonderful job, you know, winning the treble last season, bringing that into this season. They're about to win 2-0 here. Well, they're definitely going to win, I think, up at Ibrox this afternoon. That will extend his record to 57 games. And say what you want about Celtic being ahead of the rest, Tom. To win 50 or to remain 57 games unbeaten shows that you've got those boys doing something right on the training ground. You've got them right mentally come the weekend. And I think he deserves all the credit that is coming his way. And if Slaven Bilic was to go, Brendan Rodgers, I'm throwing it out there now, he probably won't, and he's happy where he is. But West Ham, someone like a Brendan Rodgers that could come in and really play the West Ham way, and that's something that your fans want.
Apparently the old the 2 days want Rafa though.
Rafa is someone that I could see down there at West Ham. There has been talk for a long while that he and Mike Ashley don't see eye to eye up in Newcastle. And despite all of the talk off the field of unrest, what a job he's done to get Newcastle up and running at the start of this season. You know, they're in the top eight this season and, you know, new to the league, didn't get the signings, or at least my understanding of the situation is he didn't get the signings that he was really wanting at St James's Park. So if, it's a big if at this stage, Slaven does go, then, Rafa Benitez, I think, is one name that would definitely be in the mix.
There's one line of conversation that's still doing the rounds, and I suppose it will do as long as Celtic are as dominant as they are in Scotland and north of the border at the moment. Is there possible inclusion down the line in the Premier League?
No, I don't think it is. I think that ship has sailed, and the reason I say that, Tom, why would a Newcastle, a West Ham, an Everton, why on earth would they vote for Celtic to come into the Premier League? They wouldn't. They're all, at the end of the day, competing for the same. They all want the same money that comes in from Champions League football. I have no doubt, and I know an awful lot of people might disagree with me, that if Celtic, it's a big if, were to come into the Premier League, it would take them time, but give them 5-6 years, no doubt in my mind, Celtic would be up there. They are one of, there's no doubt in my mind they are one of the big clubs in Europe. You look at their fan base, you look at what, you heard Brendan Rodgers there talk about the atmosphere on European nights. If Celtic were given access to the riches that are on offer in the Premier League, I'm not saying it would happen overnight, but give them 5-6 years, Celtic, you see it, the stats bear fruit. I think only Manchester United and maybe Liverpool have more fans worldwide than Celtic as a United Kingdom brand and club. So that gives you an idea of the potential that football club has, but I just don't see it.
Do you think even if they were given a lot of money, the problem isn't a money issue for Celtic or a financing, it's the league they play in. They're not challenged domestically. So it's very hard to go into European competitions and raise your game significantly against much better opposition.
It comes down to money, though.
You can buy great players, but if they're not playing Europeans, you look at the Premiership and as an example, all those clubs playing Champions League football get tough matches week in, week out in difficult conditions against world-class opposition. Celtic don't get that.
No, but
you can build a team, but if you're not playing anyone domestically for 20, 30 matches a year, how do you bridge the gap?
That's part of it, but at the end of the day, it comes down to money, and money alone. Celtic's highest paid player is the captain, Scott Brown. I'm told he's on £28,000 a week. Huge money, don't get me wrong. Look at Burnley. Burnley have now got players, with all due respect to Burnley, players that are on £50,000 a week at Burnley Football Club. They're now in the top 30 of the richest clubs in world football due to the new TV rights deal, and that's where Celtic are not able to compete. At the end of the day, it comes down to money.
Again, but that money is dependent on the league league that they play in.
Exactly.
And they play in a weak league, and they play in a weak league financially
and, that's
and
it.
Standard-wise. And, so that's always going to be the issue.
That will always be the issue. They cannot go if Burnley, and this is crazy saying this, I think we can all accept Celtic are a much bigger club than Burnley Football Club, but if Burnley are in for a player or Celtic are in for a player financially, they can't compete. And until Celtic, Scottish football gets a change, who knows, we may one day soon move into a European closed Super League. I know that's been talked about an awful lot. One thing I am certain of, though, there is no chance in heck Celtic will ever be allowed into the Premier League, because there's fear from your West Hams, your Evertons, your Spurs, your Newcastles, even to an extent Liverpool's, that they come in and they would take an awful lot of money away from us.
So what does Celtic need? They need a sugar daddy. And the problem is with coming in and becoming a vanity project for someone, a Chinese owner or a wealthy owner from the Middle East, that the return, you can't make the return off Celtic because of the league they play in. The money's not there for the television rights.
The money isn't.
So that's why they can't get the sugar daddy ownership.
And what you need is, you need a good manager like a Brendan Rodgers, and you look at an Ajax. Ajax got to the Europa League final last season on good management, finding and recruiting good young players and proper good coaching on the training fields. And I think Celtic and Brendan Rodgers have got that. Yes, as I say, there's still a bit of a naivety when it comes to the Champions League, but don't be surprised. I truly believe this. If Celtic were to finish third in their Champions League group, they're behind PSG, and they've got, who else is in their group? Another big team, name escapes me right now, Bayern Munich. If they were to finish third in that group and go into Europa League, I think Celtic have got it in them to go pretty deep in the Europa League, because on those European nights, Celtic Park is incredibly special, and there'll be a lot of clubs that would and a lot of teams that would struggle with that atmosphere.
I suppose the other thing to throw in is the conversation we were having before that about the derby as well, and what that means to Celtic fans, what that means to Scottish football fans as well. If they're playing in a Premier League, then you would be doing away with one of the biggest games in Glasgow, in Scottish football, in history as well. And where do you draw the line? Because obviously you've got to give other teams in Scotland the opportunity as well.
And that's the problem, Tom, and I think that's why the ship has sailed on this one. Had it been 10 years ago when Rangers were, you know, up there competing, fist-fighting with Celtic for league titles, then it may well have been an easier conversation to say both Celtic and Rangers to come on down. I mean, you just have to look Cardiff, Swansea City, they're Welsh playing in the Premier League, but these are conversations that were probably had, and as I say, a lot of greedy, not greedy clubs, but a lot of clubs trying to protect their own interests said, listen, we don't need Celtic and Rangers. And now what has happened with Rangers falling so far off the pace, Tom, Celtic are now the lifeblood of Scottish football. Then Scottish football needs Celtic to do well in Europe to boost our coefficient. And just as I say that, we've got a goal down at the London Stadium. It's all over this one. It's West Ham 0, Tottenham 3. I did say at the start of the show, Slaven Bilic, not a dead man walking, but there's something set in at that football club. Something is just not right at West Ham, and they've been absolutely done today. They really have. Harry Kane with a free kick wide on the right-hand side. It's an unbelievable free kick. It strikes the base of the post. It comes out to Serge Aurier, the new signing from PSG. He puts a cross in. It smacks off the bottom of Ogbonna, but the way that West Ham's luck is going, it falls to the feet of Christian Eriksen. One swipe of the right boot, tucks it home from about the penalty spot into the bottom corner. Joe Hart, no chance. West Ham 0, Spurs 3. The natives are restless. Spurs are bouncing on. And, Slaven Bilic will have to...
Gone tonight, mate.
Yeah, he might be.
Gone
he
tonight.
Might be.
Gone tonight. You don't lose to Spurs 3-0 at home.
And it could be worse. There's still, what is there? It's only 60 minutes gone, Tom.
It
could get a lot worse, yeah.
Right, what else is going on? Well, I just want to stick with Brendan Rodgers. I think Chris was very eloquent about the way he talked about the influence that Rodgers has brought to Celtic. And I suppose it's in the nature, isn't it, that he wants to achieve more with that club and is limited as to how much he can achieve. He can continue the winning streak that they're on at the moment. One man who believes he's had a huge impact is Shay Given. These are his thoughts on the influence that is Brendan Rodgers.
They were able to sell their best players, Celtic, because there wasn't a Rangers in the league. And they were their only team that could actually put any pressure on them. So for years they were waiting. They were selling all the best players because they didn't need them. You should have really kept some of them because you want to compete in Europe.
Do you think that Brendan's stock has gone up? Or do you think, you know, if there's a big job in the Premier League now, that they'd be fishing around Brendan? Do you think?
I would think there would, and there should be.
Mm.
Because Brendan, as he proved at Liverpool for a while, maybe the wheels did come off late on, but he's proved that he's a good manager. And you look at him, I tell you what, you'd be fearful of Rangers to actually, on that one given day, that they can rise to the occasion and beat them. Of all teams to do, it won't damage your stock.
Doesn't he need to do, it sounds harsh, but doesn't he need to do more than win the Scottish Premiership and have this fantastic record to enhance his reputation? Doesn't he need Celtic, for example, to do well in the Champions League, make progress in the Champions League. Wouldn't that be the way that he would get a top job back in England, if indeed he wants one, which he says at the moment he's not interested?
He said, but he's not spending money. He's not spending money to make it, because they're so good in the Scottish League. He doesn't really have to. But when you're diminishing, you're going down like that. When you're playing in the Champions League, then they're getting found out. So they're not going to make it, because it's not competitive enough.
In my opinion, you shouldn't be judging the Champions League. He played Paris Saint-Germain last week. Their team cost over 500 million. I think the Celtic team cost 12 million, the whole team. I mean, Neymar's wages, probably the whole club would be under 1 week of Neymar's wages.
No, they play Anderlecht on Wednesday night, for example.
That's realistically their best chance of going on in Europe this year. Bayern Munich, Anderlecht. Anderlecht is a cup final. They should be looking at that game with a realistic chance of obviously going through. In my opinion, there's no chance of getting in the top two in that group. Such a tough group. But Anderlecht is a game that Brendan will be looking at thinking, tell you what, we've got to beat Anderlecht away, or at least get a draw and then beat them back at Parkhead. And then they finish third and they stay in the Europa League.
The years are going by now for them to actually get out of a group stage.
They've got a lucky draw, but the problem is they're lower seeds when the draw is always made and they're always up against us every season.
It's getting harder and harder all the time. And I know you're saying your pedigree will be there if it's in the Champions League. Well, you've got to be honest about it, Jeff. It's going to be extremely hard for them to actually get out of a group stage.
Maybe the best option is to get to the Europa League and have a good run in the Europa League.
Maybe so.
And that might do the same thing.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Been another goal. Where's it been? Chris McCarty.
It's down at the London Stadium yet again. However, it's not for Spurs. West Ham, I don't want to say, are back in it, but they've got themselves at least a consolation, something to build on for the final 27 minutes or so. It's a corner from the right-hand side. It's flicked on by big Jose Fonte, the Portuguese defender, and that master poacher, Javier Hernandez. His movement is second to none. He just goes and he gives. He comes, peels off into the back post, and there he is heading it past Hugo Lloris. I saw him in action, Tom, live, Javier Hernandez. Yeah. I've got to say, watching him, when you're live at a game and just watching his movement, it is literally, it's different class. He is a poacher extraordinaire. He has scored West Ham's first goal of the day. Unfortunately, though, they've conceded three at the other end. So 66 minutes on the clock, it's West Ham 1.
Harry Kane has hit the post twice in the last 5 minutes as well from that free kick, and also a one-on-one from a difficult angle against Joe Harton. Joe Harton, goal, the England goalkeeper, just looks helpless, doesn't he?
Yeah, you say England goalkeeper. How on earth, how long he can keep that number one jersey is... It is a well. It'll be.
He's getting plenty of practice.
He's not the best goalkeeper.
Full time up in Scotland as well.
Yeah, full time up in Ibrox. All smiles for Celtic. It's now 57 games unbeaten domestically, because it's Rangers 0, Celtic 2. Brendan Rodgers, thumbs up for a few of his players. A few handshakes as well. Goals from Tom Rogic and Lee Griffith means that Celtic, well, they can do no wrong. They haven't done wrong in an awful long time, it's fair to say. Rangers players a little chastised, a little down in the dumps, as you'd expect. They've lost an old firm. The press, I'm sure, will not be kind to them in the morning. Celtic, though, well, they roll on. All smiles there. Rangers 0, Celtic 2.
Let us go to the United States now and get the latest from Major League Baseball.
Yeah, we're getting towards the end of the Major League Baseball season, just as we have also entered the first couple of weeks of the NFL season. And I can give you a bit of a quick update on terms of which teams are in the playoff hunt. Now, two teams have qualified in the National League, have clinched their divisions. That's the Washington Nationals and the LA Dodgers. In the National League Central, it's the Chicago Cubs. Do we have more action?
No, you can tell Tom's a West Ham fan. He only ever gets excited when West Ham are on. But yes, it's a great chance. A real good header from Javier Hernandez as well. But it's safely into the grasp of Hugo Lloris. Across from the right, Javier Hernandez again finding space inside the box. His header from about, 13 yards or so, straight into the grasp of Hugo Lloris. But that's better from West Ham. They are still 3-1 down.
Yeah, going back to baseball, Major League Baseball, hunt for the October playoffs. Getting towards the business end of the season now, a couple of clubs have clinched in the National League. That's the Washington Nationals and the LA Dodgers. In the National League Central, it's the Chicago Cubbies. They are in control. They have a 5-game lead over the St. Louis Cardinals. In the American League, it looks like Houston Astros and Cleveland Indians have clinched their respective divisions. Boston Red Sox have definitely qualified for the playoffs, but they have not yet clinched the division. They are four matches ahead of their great rivals, the New York Yankees. Now, local interest in the LA Dodgers, of course. Our good friends at Emirates Airline are a sponsor of the Dodgers. The Dodgers clinched last night. Let's just listen to how they clinched the National League East.
The Dodgers honor Tommy Lasorda on his 90th birthday as they host the Giants a win away from a fifth straight division title. In the third inning, starter Rich Hill helps his own cause.
first pitch, drive into left field. That's going to split the alleys. Here comes Forsythe. He's going to score. And for Rich Hill, he goes down to second base. He trots in looking like the mad stork.
Dellinger to right. Hence going back at the wall, and it's gone. A three-run shot for Cody Bellinger. His 39th. Now one ahead of Messrs. Robinson and Berger. The 0-2. Strikeout number 7. That is the 9th strikeout of the game. One strike away. And for the 5th consecutive year, the Dodgers are the champions of the National League West. This year, a smooth flight, but a bumpy landing.
4-2 Dodgers is your final as the champagne flows in Los Angeles. The Dodgers have now won back-to-back games on the heels of a 4-game skid. Kenley Jansen reaches the 40-save mark for the third time in his career.
Good news for the Dodgers then.
Yes, the Dodgers who have qualified, of course. Local interest at Emirates Airlines are a sponsor there in LA for the Dodgers. They have been one of the dominant teams in Major League Baseball. Let's just switch codes. It's week 3 this weekend in the NFL. Only a handful of undefeated teams after a couple of rounds, which is interesting. It shows how level the playing field is in the NFL. I can tell you that the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens are both 2-0 in the AFC North. Denver Broncos and Kansas City Chiefs, they've won both their games in the AFC West. Detroit Lions are undefeated in the NFC, and in the NFC South, both the Atlanta Falcons and Carolina Panthers are 2-0. Results from this weekend, there was a Thursday night match which saw the LA Rams defeat the San Francisco 49ers 41-39. And of course, this weekend it's a round of international matches, or there's an international match at Wembley, to be precise. It's tomorrow at Wembley. It sees the Baltimore Ravens take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's listen to the preview ahead of that match at Wembley tomorrow for the NFL.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here. And Buck, I think this is the sneaky good game of the week.
Absolutely a great game to watch. Baltimore's defense versus the Jacksonville Jaguars defense. Two high-powered defenses going at it.
Yeah, looking forward to watching this one. And trust me, you're going to want to wake up with, and watch with the world here. NFL on Yahoo, September 24th, 9:30 Eastern time. That's a nice morning game there. Ravens-Jags live from London. This will be a fun one, Buck. And when we look for a matchup in this game, we're going to go back to Leonard Fournette, the rookie running back, because this offense needs him to get rolling. And going up against Tyus Bowser, a nice-looking rookie linebacker. For the
Well, absolutely. It has to be about Leonard Fournette because we've seen the issues that Blake Bortles has had as a passer. So they need to run the football. And when you get Leonard Fournette, you're talking about a power runner, a guy who is physical, tough. He's a grinder. He really can work well between the tackles, but also has a little burst. In this clip here, we see 3-4 broken tackles. He sets the tempo for this offense. You want to grind it out. You want to be physical. You want to be punishing. They need to run the ball 35-plus times to have a chance of beating the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, they got to take the ball out of the quarterback's hands, run the football, play good defense. That's their best hope here in London. On the other side of the ball, how about another rookie, Tyus Bowser, a guy we talked a bunch about coming out of the University of Houston. I love the way he's playing for the Baltimore Ravens. He's been outstanding in pass coverage. This week, though, it's going to be about what he does against the run. And when you break down his game against the Cleveland Browns, you see a little bit of his versatile skill set here. Going to try to hit him with a zone read. Now, you got a quarterback in here in Kevin Hogan they want to run the football with. Watch him read. Okay, he's really kind of slow playing this thing. He's got both. And then adjust, react, explode, and finish with the tackle. Now you're going to see him rush the passer a little bit and what he can bring in this area. Sean Coleman, right tackle for the Browns, going to get a lesson from the rookie about hand usage. Watch him get the hands off, swipe, rip, and then the effort keep coming, and once again, finish. He's a great finisher, Bucky.
He is a great finisher, and the one thing that the Baltimore Ravens defense has been doing, they've been finishing their opponents, and because of that, and because they've been able to create turnovers, I'm going to continue to go with the Baltimore Ravens. I believe their defense finds a way to create some extra opportunities, and their offense punches it in. They beat the Jaguars in London.
Well, if you tell me you get week one Jags that we saw against Houston, I think it'd be competitive. We get week two Jags. Not so much.
Nope.
I lean more towards there. I'm going to go with you, the Baltimore Ravens. I like the Baltimore Ravens. Get on that plane. Get over there to London. Play that early morning game and come home with a win.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.